Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks again for tuning in. Insomnia. The dreaded insomnia. You lay awake at night, tossing, turning, dreading how tired you'll feel in the morning. You go through the next day exhausted and sluggish, counting down the hours until you can crawl back into bed to not sleep. In fact, researchers at Harvard Medical School, as part of an American insomnia study, found that insomnia costs $63 billion, or about 11 days per year in lost productivity among workers on average in this country. And it's not that people are calling in sick. They're still going in, just doing less because they're so tired for the most part. Seeing as to how much sleeplessness can affect productivity, imagine constantly having to suffer through sleep disorders like insomnia, sleep terrors, and even sleepwalking. Well, our next guest, Blake Butler, has struggled with all of this. He once stayed awake, he says, for an incredible 129 hours straight. And he joins us today to talk about his new memoir entitled Nothing, A Portrait of Insomnia. And Blake, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it very much.
And listeners, you can call in with your own stories of insomnia and how it affects your work, however you define your work. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we definitely want to tell everybody else what has worked to relieve it. Blake, you're a writer, right?
That's correct.
And so how did your insomnia affect your work?
Well, it's something I've been going through since I was a little kid, and I guess for me now, if I don't get a good night's sleep, I can't really, think clear. If I'm supposed to be writing a sentence that makes coherent sense on whatever level, if I come to the desk with a brain full of mush, then it's kind of like, how do you even start doing that, It's different than other jobs where you can kind of dance through your day, like pressing buttons or pretending like you're on point, but like a book is something that is going to hold up well after the work is over, supposedly. So, it almost reduces you to a point of like not even worth trying,
What was that 129 hours of consecutive wakefulness all about? I guess you weren't trying to set a Guinness record, right?
No, it was totally, I've never really tried to stay awake. All of those exercises that were in Guinness seemed to have different effects because they were forcing it, whereas like a natural insomnia feels totally different to me. I had mono at the time, so I was supposed to be sleeping, 15 hours a day or
more.
Wow,
you were supposed to be wiped and hardly able to help yourself from sleeping.
Exactly, and so I think that the fact that I knew I was supposed to be doing that is what made me not do it. That seems to be the number one thing that keeps me awake, is some kind of pressure of knowing that either tomorrow I have this thing to do and I need to sleep now, like that you were talking about, that discord between knowing what's coming and how well you should be prepared for it, or will, in a sense, make your brain fight your body.
What did you do during all those hours?
I was living with my parents. I was 19, so I kind of stumbled around the house. I talked to a head that came out of the wall, laid in the bed and cried, like wishing I could go to sleep. Just laid there. All the hours kind of turned into the same hour over and over again.
Have you been to any doctors or taken any medications for sleep?
Yeah, I've taken Lunesta and Ambien and all the over-the-counter stuff, but that stuff kind of works. Like Lunesta knocked me out every time. But when you wake up from taking those kind of medications, it's almost like you're drunk when you wake up, So your productivity, you might have slept for 7 hours, but now you're like underwater when you wake up, and you feel like you came out of a chemical bath or something. So you can get that fake sleep, but it's also like you're fake awake when you come back out of it. Or at least that's how I felt. And that seems like to be pretty common. And I think that the fact that a lot of people are using those kind of meds to replicate sleep is one of the things that's probably leading to the workplace thing where, you know, oh, well, I got my time, but now I'm not who I usually am.
David in Brooklyn can relate, I think. Hi, David. You're on WNYC.
Hello. I have something called non-24-hour sleep disorder. I've probably had it since I was about 15 or so. And I went through high school and not being able to sleep maybe except for maybe 3 hours a night and so forth, getting sick most of the time in the mornings from it because I just wouldn't get sleep. I'd have like red and purple blotches around my eyes just because my sleep was so bad.
What does that non-24-hour sleep disorder mean? Why is it called that?
Basically, I don't get reset in the morning. Sunlight doesn't reset my brain. So my sleeping schedule moves forward about somewhere between half an hour to 2 hours every day. So I can never have a set sleeping schedule. There is a treatment for it, and it does work for me, but I didn't find out until I was about 33 or so.
What is it?
It doesn't work for everyone, but for me it works. I take 9 milligrams of melatonin at the same time every single day, and I'm able to fall asleep maybe 5 or 6 hours afterwards.
Uh-huh.
If I don't take it, then I'm up and I can't sleep.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Blake Butler, author of Nothing, A Portrait of Insomnia. And Blake, you've also suffered, you say in the book, from sleep terrors and sleepwalking, causing you, for example, to wake up in strange places, wearing different clothes, even naked. You've had conversations while unconscious, you say. That's the sleepwalking. Does that come? I mean, we've heard stories about some of the sleep medications, you know, causing this sleepwalking that people don't realize they're doing. Was it from that?
I think that predated for me the sleeplessness, because as a child I had the terrors like you're talking about where I didn't, even before I really came to be familiar with the house I was in, I would not recognize my mom coming to try to help me. And I think that hyper awareness that I also had a dream that lasted about 2 years where it was repeating every night, and I came to be afraid to go to sleep because I knew I was going to have nightmares, or I knew I was going to have this one particular dream. And so that made me, I wanted to stay up all night. And so I taught my body to reinforce that behavior of avoiding that.
So to avoid the night terrors or the bad dreams, you actually stayed up.
Right, exactly. And then that made, you know, that once I started getting that sleeping feeling during the day, like as a child and growing older with more thoughts coming that reinforce all of that, it kind of started to level out the periods where, like, even when I was asleep, I was kind of awake, and even when I was awake, I felt asleep. So, that kind of doubling has changed the way I think since the childhood. So, and as an adult, the more things that come to hold you awake like that, the worse that kind of torpor period seems to be reinforced.
Wayne in Bayonne, you're on WNYC with a sleeping story, a sleepwalking story, right?
Yes, several years ago when Ambien first came out, I didn't know what it was. And I was actually at a party. I'm an artist, I was at a party signing comic books. And I was at a party and someone gave me Ambien, and I went to sleep on their couch because I was sleeping over at a house because it was far into South Jersey near Philadelphia. And I fell asleep artificially, and then I had broken a bottle over someone's head. And they called the police at the party because nobody knew why. And in the end, I was let go ultimately because the guy was not hurt, and he realized there was no intent behind me hitting him in the head with a bottle. They gave me a thing called a pretrial intervention. But that stuff is really dangerous for people. So I've been an insomniac my whole life, and I have sleepwalking terrors. I have sleepwalking, all kinds of things like that. And some of those things are really terrible for people who have that affliction.
Wayne, thank you very much. Those stories are out there, I guess, about Ambien and other medications, that in some people it causes that kind of sleepwalking behavior. In your memoir, you explore not just the individual problems with insomnia, but the role of insomnia in our culture.
Right.
Is there a role of insomnia in our culture?
I think there definitely is. I mean, they say that, or at least in my research, the two major things that have caused insomnia in culturally were first the invention of the light bulb, which allowed us to take the distinction of day and night and obliterate it, because now we can work, you know, at 3 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon, same difference. And then the second major invention that changed that was the Internet. They say that maybe the number one cause now of insomnia is the Internet, because it's always there. It's almost as if, it used to be, as a child before I had the Internet, I always felt like I was the only person alive in my room by myself, and the night was out there, and everyone else was sleeping but me. But now, and that's true still as a human, but with the Internet, it's like everything's always still going on there. So that pull, and it causes a weird shift where I feel like I'm the only person alive in my house, but then I get on the Internet, and I know that's always there even when I lay down. So a lot of those thoughts, those recursive thoughts that cause sleep to be disrupted, are caused for me by the Internet, and I think that's true of a lot of people.
By the way, we have a number of sleep suggestions coming in. I'm not going to take all these callers on the air because it'll take too much time, but somebody's suggesting deep breathing exercises, somebody one nostril at a time, alternate single nostril breathing, someone else takes a natural medication that they describe as based around a cherry juice concentrate. Somebody says eat a banana before you go to bed. Any of the natural remedies work in your experience or your research?
I mean, I've messed with a lot of those different things, and everybody seems to have their token, but it's like sometimes those things almost, those suggestions for me, because my sleep problem isn't a physical defect, and it's not a product of like an addiction or something. It's all mental. So really, if you tell me like eat this banana and you'll go to sleep, and then I eat the banana and my brain's still spinning, it's only going to make that feeling more desperate. You know, it's like, oh well, none of these things anyone says really works. The things that I have been able to do, besides these like home cures that have never really done anything, like certain things that are more attuned to space and time have helped, such as not touching the bed unless you're going to sleep. You know, I used to lay in bed and read, or I would get on the Internet even up to like last year. But like, if you don't touch the bed and you associate the bed only with sleep, then that has helped me in some actual real way, as well as I have a white noise machine by my bed that I only turn on when I'm going to go to sleep. Uh-huh. So that sound of rushing air has kind of become a cue of sorts.
Oh, that's good. 20 seconds. Is there an upside? Has insomnia helped your waking life or your creativity as a writer in any way?
I think so. I mean, I definitely wouldn't be the person I am without it, and it does make me open to, you know, if you kind of feel like a zombie during the day, you start to see the world as a kind of zombie, not a brain-dead zombie, but someone who's open to more kinds of cues from things that straight-ahead people might just ignore.
Just so. In time for a Halloween. Blake Butler, Nothing, A Portrait of Insomnia is his book. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Tomorrow we have Matt Taibbi, among others, on Occupy Wall Street. Also tomorrow, one of this year's Nobel Peace Prize winners. Talk to you then. Thanks for listening today. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.